Accession number 24192, reel 10.
Mr. Taylor, reel 10. Unless there's anything else about the semitone, would you then pull back to the reservoir reserve position?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, and we did. Anything different about that?
Nothing different at all. We did the roughly the same things. Second kit, bit of training, and bit of sport, played football, had a game of football and this sort of thing. That's about it. Roughly the same thing in reserve.
And then you went forward into the next position. Now, neither of us can remember the name of the hill.
I can't remember that.
But it was near the Imjin.
It was near the Imjin.
And we can fill that in later. Now, could you describe the terrain in this area?
What I can remember about it is if we went to the top of the hill from our position, then we walked up the hill, then looked over the terrain. There was a valley, and there was a lot of big hills that I can recall. But it was a sort of a plateau as well, so in between the hills. So it's more of a valley than anything, I can remember, and the big hills around it.
But not the Samichon.
Not the Samichon. No. Different, slightly different. Sorry,
was it the Imjin in front of you then, or was it another different river that you'd?
No, the Imjin. The Imjin was behind us, and we were facing the enemy that came round behind us. We had it was about probably 10 minutes walk, because we used to dash down and have a swim occasionally. Low tide sort of thing, because in the winter time it used to rise about 30 feet in 24 hours when the rain came. Because when it rained, it's monsoon time.
Tell us about the rain, because we haven't covered that then.
Because we had the 8-foot trenches, and if you stepped out, it run down like a lake, the rain. It really did rain, really. It just came down sheets. And nobody expected it, really. It came through the bunkers, and because the overhead covering wasn't as it should have been as far as waterproofing is concerned. So it was all a mad scramble to try and get the covering, any covering on, what you could find, your poncho or whatever the cover is.
And when did these monsoons come? What months were they?
This would probably be about February, March, something like that, around that time. After we got out of after you got out of the semi-time, we were in a new location.
In a new look. And were you able to drain your trenches away? I mean,
you were. Because mostly the trenches were on the top of the hill. You could drain it off so it ran back down the hill.
So you'd dig a drainage.
Slight drain out of it. Yeah, dig a drain out of it so it drains off. And the pit. The mortar pits, you couldn't really do anything about it. All you could do was keep the mortar covered up and bail out, sort of thing, because you couldn't very well dig down, because you only want a certain depth anyway. So you said sort of bail it out, hopefully, try and get something put around it to soften harden the mud off a bit. That was in it. But it did rain. It was definitely monsoon stuff. Bad.
And what about the swimming in the river? Tell me about that a bit more.
It was quite fast flowing.
That's in the actual engine itself.
Actually, engine itself, yeah. We go down just for about 10 minutes, 10 or 15 minutes. Have a quick duck and take some soap down. Have a wash. That's what you wash down. It was flowed that fast. You could virtually stand at an angle of 45 degrees in the water, and the water would hold you up. As it was coming, how fast it was flowing.
It was a bit dangerous.
It was a bit dangerous, wasn't it? I mean, it wasn't that deep at the time.
How deep on you?
Probably about there, I suppose.
Up to your chest.
Still a bit. Still quite depth.
4 foot.
Yeah.
And were there any? Were the leech any problems in the water? Leeches or anything else that untoward? Or
I don't think there was any in the Imjin itself. I didn't find it. I've never heard of anybody here. Probably in some of the ditches that are running around. We had a ditch as well at the bottom where we used to do a bit of washing. used to wash your underclothes and that sort of thing, and with a bit of soap and whatever in the ditch. But I never heard of anything.
Now, what do you remember happening in this sector? I'm sorry we don't know the name of it, but as I say, we'll put it in there.
I remember the time that we, when the patrol was lost.
What happened there? Which patrol is that? Tell us the whole story.
Lieutenant Wormhold, he was the platoon commander of the Pioneer Platoon, and he was taking out the patrol at night. I have a feeling it was a recce patrol as opposed to a fighting patrol. And apparently they ran into the enemy at a certain point. I can't remember how many were killed. But I know that Wormhold and Gist went missing.
And who?
They didn't make it. A couple of Gist were missing. We had to... They sent out another patrol the following day to try and find them. So we had to fire smoke to cover them. So fire smoke between them and the Chinese across the valley. And we probably fired a year's allocation, I think, that morning of smoke, which were the type of smoke bombs which they had a setting on the fuse. So it could explode and hit the ground, or you can have it exploding in the air. And that they didn't find them. And I don't think they ever found them. They didn't, as far as I know. That was one of the sort of the bad parts of it, actually. But other than that, what the other part of the patrol, as far as I know, except for the ones who got killed, all came back safe and sound. A funny thing that happened as well was that you used to have a tank recovery vehicle used to come around, recovery tank, which was a tank. It was a Sherman with a turret taken off. They used to drive up and reservice the tanks that were on the position. And I watched it one day, and it I don't know what happened, whether he missed a gear, but it came backwards down the hill, and at the bottom of the hill was a Korean house where the old porters used to sleep. And it went straight into this house, and the house sort of settled down on top of it. And there's a guy sleeping in there, would you believe, and it went between over him, so he finished up between the tracks. And he was the only guy who was in there. If it had all been there, it was about 10, I think, used to sort of work with the companies, used to use that house as sleeping. They would have been killed. I think what happened was he missed a gear, and once it got going, he couldn't stop it.
What about the Korean porters, the South Korean porters? What were they? What did they do, and what was their role?
Carrying ammunition and sort of generally carrying stuff up to the positions, like rations and this sort of thing that came in, and sort of helped generally, really. More is stacking ammunition. There was more of them working in the echelons behind the lines than there were working actually on the front. We I don't know where we got him, but we acquired a little Korean lad. Now, I can't tell you how old he was, but I don't think anybody knew. There's the sort of people that you... I mean, he was only about... He's probably about just under 5 foot, I suppose. I couldn't tell you whether he was 15 or whether he was 12 or what. But he used to travel around with us, and we used to find a place. I mean, he used to get the hot water and that for the platoon commander and this sort of thing. And he lived with us. We used to take him swimming with us and all this sort of thing. We did take him back when we were in reserve the last time, took him back to Seoul because he wanted to go home. So the stuff he'd acquired, we put in a jeep, we borrowed a commander's jeep, and went down to Seoul. And when we got there, he couldn't find his house. He didn't know where it was. So I don't know what happened to him after that. Whether he found somebody from his family or not, I don't know. But he was around with us for some time, quite a long time. Charlie, we called him.
Anything else you remember about this time in the line? I don't know how long this was for, this third period.
I know the American said welcome to Korea when we arrived, and we'd been there, what, 9 months, probably? About 9 months.
How did that go down?
Not very well. Not very well. And I think that we had to, as I said, we had to stand two every night, this sort of thing. We had an occasion one night where we were standing two, everybody's sort of standing there, very quiet. And all of a sudden, there's a firing from the below behind us. So I dashed down and found two American sergeants, only the Americans on our right, further up the road, drunk loads of them. And they were firing off rifles and this sort of thing. And they ran out of ammunition, which was a good thing, I thought, at the time. But I told them to, in no uncertain terms, to go back to their unit, and they left. These sort of things that they used to do, the Americans, terrible sometimes. We had a case where we used to have to go over to, a Korean battalion, and sometimes we had to go over and with a platoon commander and sit in their OP for sort of do a stint of about 2 or 3 hours, and the Koreans were doing they were looking for a prisoner, I think, at the time. And they came back and said that there's nobody on this hill, and they told them to keep going until they found one. This, God, that. And that's quite an experience, sitting in the OP, listen to that. I think the Americans, if I remember, the Americans had something like that. They even had a program made out of this attack that was going to happen on this hill. I can't remember whereabouts, what hill it was now, but they had a program made out, and they brought all the big wigs in to watch it, watch people getting killed. And, but I always found that you could reckon that if the Americans were on your right or your left, you had no problems about getting attacked, because they always went the Americans.
Now, why was that? Why?
Well, I think because the Americans had a completely different way of thinking as far as defensive positions go. They'd probably dig a little foxhole and have a normal barbed wire fence at the front of the position. So if anybody came up to attack them, they could climb over the fence and they'd finish up hand-to-hand fighting on the position, which is what happened on one of the positions that we took over. Because they had no trenches, so we had to dig trenches, and they were digging up Chinese soldiers who had been buried on that position from the Americans.
So the reason you weren't attacked was that their positions were much more vulnerable.
They went for the easy option, yeah. Yeah. Well, the sort of things, I remember one night when I was on these harassing shoots, and the Americans were on our right, and they had this 75mm, it's like a recoilless job, not similar to a, what do we call it, similar to Wombat, really, only a smaller, of course. And on top of a hill. And they're firing from the top of the hill, and you had a flame come out the back of the length of this room. This sort of thing. These sort of things, silly things they used to do. I remember once when we were on this position as well, it was about 5 o'clock in the evening. In fact, we were just preparing for a meal, I think. And this big truck drove in at the bottom of the position. I think it was signals. Come out, went straight up the top of the hill and put up a 30-foot mast. On the top of the hill. So we got shelled then. And when it finished, he looked up and the mast was gone, and so were they. It's a silly thing they used to do. I don't know why. I mean, even down to the lowest Korean, he'd know if you put something up and stick it up in a mast up on a hill, you're going to get fired on. These are the sort of things that they would do. Silly things.
Any other incident in the line at that time?
What do you think? I did quite a few harassing shoots on all the time that we were there.
But any incidents happened during them? I mean, what do you remember of them? You know, I mean, you've told me how it worked, but anything happen while you were doing them?
Well, we always got a few shells in on us. Or just over us. Whether that was sort of pot shots, Deering Harrison the same as we were or not, I don't know. Whether they, because they couldn't see the flash from our mortars from behind the hill, so I think they were probably Harrison's.
Were the forward positions actually in no man's land, or were they just forward of the mortar positions? Do you see what I mean?
They were forward of us.
But they were still not in no man's land?
No. Yeah, they were forward of us, yeah. This was also one area where we had a section with a company. You remember we talked about before about splitting up you had your six mortars, two mortars per section, and this area was one of the cases where we had one section out with a company, or with a company.
And what difference did that make? Did you prefer that, or was it?
No, it didn't make that much difference, but it was assist the company. It was under their command, so they could do what they want with it. If they could support them, they can do the same harassing, same as I was doing, but from a normal position within the company. I think at the bottom of our position, they built a chapel, the Americans. And they used to, anybody got killed or shot, they used to bring them down and put them in this chapel at the bottom of our position. And the padre would come down and say last rites. And I think there was about five in there at one time, what I can remember. And then they'd be taken away after he'd administered his rites. Other than that, I can't think of anything that happened. I think one of the companies had a guy come in and gave himself up. But the trouble was that they kept pushing him along the company. We don't want you. Go to the next guy, you know, that sort of thing. Finished up somewhere along the line. And they brought him in and questioned him whether he got anything out of him. I don't know. It was very...
Why would they push him along? Why didn't they just take him in?
I don't know. I think it's the guys. I don't know why. This is a story I received, but... I mean, it was true, but nobody seemed to want to do anything about it. But anyway, it got to a point where it got boring at times. There were no patrols out. Everything was sort of stalemate, especially when the talk started. It became quite boring. Hardly any patrols, as I said. Well, I can't remember exactly when the talk started, whether it was just before we came out of the line into reserve for the last time. I think that's that was about it. I think that's as far as I can recall, actually.
So what happened next then? You pulled back out into reserve?
Into reserve. This was the last reserve, last time in reserve, the last time in the line before we went, before we moved out of Korea.
And was that at the reservoir again?
That was back at the reservoir again. It was during this time that we got shelled for some reason. I don't know who. Nobody seems to know who did that. We got. I can't remember quite, but one guy. I know one guy well because I was talking to him before he got killed. He was a medic who was coming to join us. He'd been with another unit. And he was coming to join us and come back to Hong Kong with us. Lance Corporal. They seemed to think that it was. It couldn't have been the Chinese. We're too far away, so it's got to be. It could have been another unit. Whether they got their sightings wrong, or they must have got the sightings wrong somewhere along the line. But we certainly got hit with a number of shells or mortars. Can't remember what they were. A few trucks got damaged. This guy was killed, I know, and I can't remember if I think there's one or two others injured. And I never did find out. I don't think anybody else did find out exactly. That was a cover-up job somewhere. Found out who was actually responsible. And because then we had to wait for the people to come and relieve us in reserve, which were the Kings, this King's Regiment. They came, some were excused boots, some were excused shirts, some were excused socks. Because they've been training in Hong Kong and got the sweat rash, and so they were all excused shirts, wearing shirts, wearing socks that look like Dad's army coming in.
And when would this be about, or are you not sure?
This would probably be when do we go out? We went out in October. Was that in October 52? So it would probably be just before, right, prior to. It was virtually prior to us moving out anyway, because they were coming in and taking over, and we were moving out, sort of company at a time. Back to Busan, and back to Busan by train. And met up with the same book that took us out.
The Empire Orwell.
Took us out. And went trip back to Hong Kong. Got off the boat. Think we bussed or trucked to the station. Ready to go down, the covering station, ready to go down to the territories.
That's where you were. You were in the new territories.
We were in the territories, yeah.
And where was your base? Kowloon? Sorry. In New Territories?
No. Fanling was the nearest. Fanling was the nearest place to all camps.
What was the camp called?
Dill's Corner. A set of Nissen huts. I went back there in 86 and they were still there.
That's after General Dill, I presume, was it?
I think it was, yeah.
And what was the state of the unit, would you say, when you got there? I mean, you've been through this period of fight. It's occasionally sharp, but a lot of it routine.
Yeah. I thought we did quite well actually, when I was moving around and settled down fairly quickly and back in the old routine, peacetime training or whatever you like to call it. Settled down quite well, I thought, anyway. Back to the regimental duties again. We back to training on what they call Route 2 out of the territories into Hong Kong. They built trenches, so our job, of course, was to stop anything getting into Hong Kong. So the first line of defence was the trenches that they dug on Route 2. Immediately behind the camp, you had a big hill which used to take us about, I think, 45 minutes, 50 minutes to get up there and man the trenches.
Do you know the name of the hill? Well, I presume.
I don't think it was a name to it, actually. So we got there and manned the trenches, and the whole company would move out. A lot of the time, maybe a couple of rifle companies went at the same time. Also, when we...
What were the defensive positions like? How did they compare with the ones you'd had in Korea? Were they pretty much...
These were pretty good because they'd been specially built. Proper overhead cover and everything. And they were manned during the day and night by Chinese. The Chinese who lived in that area used to man it, and they got paid for it. So when we were battalion order sergeant, you went drove up there at night, and you had to call a roll. That was quite fun, actually. I mean, you'd call out the name as it was down on the list, but anybody could answer because they all looked the same to me. So anybody could answer. I mean, I expect that brother came up because the other ones were in Hong Kong somewhere. I think probably they probably left and went home anyway after we left them. That was quite fun.
And were they actually troops or just...
Just ordinary civilians.
And they would occupy the trenches when you were there?
They were there to sort of stop anybody from stealing the wood and overhead cover and all the revetting and all this sort of thing out there. We only occupied them as exercises and for a couple of days. We did other exercises, but not in those positions.
And what about your rank? What rank were you at this stage?
I was a sergeant.
You were a sergeant. When had you been made sergeant?
Got made sergeant in Korea. Doing Korea.
Now, how important was that to you?
That was very important at the time.
How big a step up from corporal is it, do you think, in the army, or in your unit?
I think it's very responsible, because very important, because at that time I did an OP job after I made sergeant, went up to the OP, which I wouldn't do as a corporal, this sort of thing, which was up with a rifle company in the OP. More responsibility, of course. You had a platoon sergeant, but you still got more responsibility within the setup as a section sergeant. But I was virtually doing the job as a sergeant anyway, as a corporal. So
now, what about the sergeant's mess? Can you describe what facilities they had for you at
what, in Hong Kong?
Dill's Corner.
I think I'm telling you wrong. We didn't go into Dill's Corner initially. We went into Norwegian Farm Camp.
Okay, that's not a problem.
Went into Norwegian Farm Camp.
What was that like?
It was mainly Nissen Huts. The support company had buildings. And the bunk on the end. You had a bunk on the end, you only had a barrack room, or two barrack rooms, and another bunk on the end, and so on. As it went, I think there were about, I know the mortars, the MMGs, anti-tank, I think we were all in the buildings. So, and the rest of the companies were in Nissen Huts.
Now, what were the sergeant's messes like at these two camps?
The sergeant's mess was a Nissen Hut, big Nissen Hut. You had the usual bar. Nothing too special. Furniture and somewhere to sit. It wasn't anything out of the ordinary. Too lush. The RSM was pretty good. He said that the dress, we had a dress, special dress, white shirt and grey flannels, which we got from the tailor in the camp for the mess dress at night. So you went for dinner, and everybody had a white shirt and grey slacks. And the RSM, they were cool. You had a lot of...
that's Gilchrist still.
That's Gilchrist, yeah. You had a lot of quite a number of people in the mess who were single. And he said that all the married families, all the married wives, could be allowed in the mess one night a week. On a Thursday, I think it was, at a particular time. Unless it was, of course, a special occasion, then they would come in over on a weekend. But normally any wife or anybody wanted to bring their wife in could only bring them in at that time during the week. So he'd set it up pretty well.